You're listening to Marketplace Weekend, where the economy meets real life. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. We are starting this special show with a twist on our segment Long and Short. That's when we borrow terms from the world of finance, long as in betting on something, short as in betting against it. And this week, we're doing a special New Year's version, what our guests are long and short for 2017. We've brought in Joe Weisenthal, co-host of What'd You Miss on Bloomberg TV, and Marketplace's own Kimberly Adams. Welcome.
Thank you.
Hey there.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too.
Well, let's think about this. We're going to go long and short into 2017. What we are thinking about in the world of economics, politics, sociology, all of this stuff, how it all runs together in the new year. Kimberly, why don't you tee us up? What are you long?
I feel badly kind of starting it out on a downer, but I'm going to go long on income inequality, and that income inequality is only going to get worse in 2017. I mean, it's already been doing pretty badly. There was a study out from Berkeley just recently that said between the 1980s and 2014, the average pre-tax income of the top 1% of adults rose from $420,000 to $1.3 million versus obviously not the same for the people in the lower incomes. I mean, their income share increased like 12%. So if we see the kind of tax plan that Donald Trump is putting forward, even though most people will get some kind of a tax cut, the largest benefit of the Trump tax plan as it currently stands goes to the people at higher income levels. And then there's another thing that's kind of been percolating around in my head about people who make money off of the stock market. The people who tend to gain a lot of wealth often make a lot of money off the stock market. And you can make money off the stock market by paying attention to data that comes out from governments, from companies, and following the markets, even following our numbers, right?
Sure.
But as we heard in our Marketplace poll, there are lots and lots of people in America who just don't believe economic indicators.
Yeah.
And so
including in many ways the president-elect.
Right, including the new administration.
Very true. But I think the people who are already making money in the markets and who do believe these indicators are going to continue to do so. Mm. And some of the people who were already economically disadvantaged in this economy, if they continue to not believe the numbers about the economy, I wonder if they're going to be able to benefit and navigate the terrain going forward.
I love that angle. I had never thought about it before, but the idea that misinformation, the sort of cynical push towards skepticism about all data having a sort of inequality effect of harming the people who aren't armed with the power to sort of get past that. I'd never thought about that before, but now that you say it, the financial and economic ramifications of that do seem pretty profound. And so, you know, you have all the people going into gold because they're told lies about the state of the economy and the ramifications that have. It's a really interesting twist on that.
Well, and one thing I wonder when we think about what the Federal Reserve is going to do over the course of 2017, we heard Janet Yellen talk a little bit about the normalization of their asset purchases, right? So unwinding lots of stuff that they bought during the recession, which they're still in the process of doing. And the argument that is twinned with that is that people at the top did the best, under the Fed's asset purchase program. I know that there are Fed people who would push back against that, but I do think the idea of like, okay, so if we return to some kind of normal policy, we might not, depends on what the economy's doing. Does that have any effect on inequality? I don't know.
I think the interest rate hikes, and we're expecting several interest rate hikes in 2017 based on what the people at the Fed are saying, is something that is also going to exacerbate income inequality, because we talk about interest rates and sort of how they affect quote-unquote regular people in terms of like how much you're going to pay for a mortgage.
Yep.
But another thing it really impacts is how much you're paying on your credit card interest. Mm. I just got a notification from my credit card a couple of days ago saying, hey, your interest rates going up, because what is it based on? It's based on the Fed rate and whatever exorbitant rate they want to put on top of it. And so people who are already struggling, who already have a lot of credit card debt, are going to see themselves paying more in the coming year. But people who maybe are sitting on a lot of cash are going to see more money coming their way because they're going to be getting better interest rates.
So, Joe, I actually want to go to your short because I think it works in the same sort of high finance realm as Kimberly's a little bit. Walk me through it.
Yeah, I guess I'm taking a slightly opposite spin on what could happen this year. Not totally different, but I don't think this year is going to be as great for the big banks as people expect. And so we've seen this huge surge in shares of companies like Goldman Sachs since the election, and there's a lot of reasons why people seem to be excited. One of them is expectations of regulatory rollback. Another one is expectations of higher growth due to perhaps more fiscal spending, more deficit spending under this president. And all those arguments kind of make sense. But it just feels to me like, A, nothing ever works out quite like people expect. You know, going back to 2009, a lot of people were worried that Obama was going to be some big socialist and very bad for Wall Street, and he bashed bonuses, but it turned out to be amazing years for Wall Street. Then beyond that, one of the things that I think is underappreciated is the connection between finance, particularly complicated finance, and globalization. And so you trade overseas, that requires currency hedging, letters of credit for actual trade. And a lot of the growth of the financial industry, particularly Wall Street in particular, is very much mirrors the explosion of globalization. As we have more administrations who are less inclined for globalization in one way or another, maybe not dramatic ripping up the trade deals, but hurting globalization at the margins, that will reduce the need for a lot of the services that these big banks offer. And so my belief is that 2017 and beyond won't be as great for Wall Street as people think.
Boy, but here's the thing about that.
Mm-hmm.
We're basing all of this on this premise that the policies we've been hearing coming out of the Trump campaign and the transition team are the policies that are actually going to be pursued.
True.
And I'm not entirely convinced that that's going to be the case. We've seen a lot of, movement in policy stances since Trump got elected, and I imagine we'll see more. And there's also the fact that that transition team is really scrambling to get all the people they need in place in time for him to take office. And so I think there's going to be maybe a longer than usual ramp up time from when Donald Trump enters office and when he actually is able to start implementing some of these policy goals that he has. And so I guess I agree with you, but I'm also taking a step back and saying that's if what we've heard is going to happen actually happens.
Okay, so this might be the last time I get to do it. I'm going to quote Hamilton. Winning is easy, young man. Governing is harder.
Perfect use of that line here.
Thank you. I was really excited about it. Also, Joe, you teed up Kimberly short perfectly. Hit it, Adams.
I am going short on multilateral trade deals in particular because nobody really likes them anymore. Nobody in at least governments, and especially as we move to more populist governments all over the world that are just saying, nope, arms crossed. We want more protectionist policies. We're going to focus on jobs for our workers. And suddenly, after decades of hearing something different, trade is suddenly bad. And I think that the United States in particular is going to be really, really reexamining its trade deals. And I think that's going to happen regardless of what Trump does. I think our Republican Congress is going to be pushing for that, as well as Trump supporters are
And many of the sort of more left-leaning Democrats.
Right.
Yeah, a lot of the people in unions who broke ranks with many times their own union to support Trump in the election because of trade. And that, I think, creates an opportunity for China. And I think we're going to see them be more active on the global stage. The Chinese are quite active already in terms of global trade, but I think we're going to see them take more of a leadership role moving forward as the U.S. retreats in this arena.
It really is remarkable the degree to which nobody at this point in the U.S. political sphere really wants to stand up for these trade deals anymore. on the right or the left, at best you hear people say, well, the trade deals have merit to them, but they need a lot of work. Very few people, unlike the 90s and early 2000s, enthusiastically making the case for free trade.
All right, Joe. So if trade is meh, big banks, meh, income inequality persists, what are you long?
I am long digital currencies in 2017. I think for a long time, they've been the realm of either very out there tech types or anti-government libertarians. And most mainstream people were sort of skeptical that they had any value. But they continue to grow quietly. They didn't get a lot of hype in 2016.
No.
And I think as people around the world are across the ideological aisle, left and right, more skeptical about government, more into privacy and things like that, that there will be a continued and growing interest in various non-traditional ways of moving money around.
But who's going to accept them?
Well, people.
Oh, I know.
Yes.
I was actually out with friends the other day, and after going to this concert, we stopped at a falafel shop, and there was a sign inside, and it said, "We accept Bitcoin."
There you go.
And we were having this discussion about it because it was in a very trendy neighborhood in D.C. And there were like it was open late. So all the partygoers were going in there and then this big sign said, you know, we accept Bitcoin. And we were talking about it. And somebody said, well, it doesn't mean anything. It's not backed by anything. And they said, well, what is the U.S. dollar backed
right.
by?
True.
That's the argument I love. And people work themselves in knots with these philosophical questions about where does it come from? What's it backed by? But then if you start expanding that, like all of reality starts to fall apart if we push too hard.
Right. Well, and if you, you know, really answer that question, it's backed by faith in the U.S. right. government. And that's a little low right now
exactly.
in most people's
so
mind.
That's exactly right. If people are losing faith in their government, then people might be willing to seek out monetary alternatives.
All right, we're ending it there because you guys are amazing. Joe Wiesenthal, Kimberly Adams, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.